Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song. Cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
Athletic. Who are they exactly?
Charles and Lyle.
So, a very good evening to you, and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendez. We're coming to you live from the Valley. We're going to be looking back at yesterday's 1-1 draw in our first ever league meeting with Accrington Stanley. Joining me here in the studio at the Valley to do just that is Mr. Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nathan?
Living a dream.
Yeah. Just freshly back from Leeds.
A couple of hours ago. Yeah, 3 o'clock.
Nice night out in Leeds.
I only went for a curry in end.
Yeah.
I thought it was all up.
Managed to stay out of trouble.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Excellent. And also joining the pair of us, making his first appearance of the season, is Lewis Kerr. How are you doing, Lewis?
Yeah, not bad, mate.
Yeah, you got back from Accrington sort of yesterday.
Yesterday. Solid. A 5-hour drive. So
yeah, worth every minute.
Yeah,
every penny of petrol money, of course. So on tonight's show, we will look back at yesterday's 1-1 draw. Like I said, up at the Crown Ground with Accrington Stanley. There's so many little teams in our division now. I forget which one's which, including ourselves in that. Unfortunately, we'll hear from Lee Bowyer. He had plenty to say after yesterday's game. Clearly, wasn't too happy. I also want to hear from you guys as well, whether you're at the game or whether you just followed it on online or on Valley Pass or whatnot. Let us know what you made of the performance and of the result. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. You can have your say on the game. Also on, you know, anything you want to talk about Charlton related. We're still in the loan window. Is there any players you've got your eye on that you hope will come in? The takeover still hasn't happened and it doesn't seem to be any closer. If you want to air your frustrations about that, you can do so. And also, you may have noticed in the ground yesterday, if you were there or online, I put up a photo of a banner that arrived in the ground just before kickoff yesterday, held by the Charlton fans. It said, EFL, so the English Football League, not fit for purpose. So I saw saw that banner, I wanted to find out why that banner was being waved. So I rang up the person who waved it, Ben Hannum. I spoke to him on the phone this afternoon. He was part of the group that took the banner into the ground, so I wanted to find out why he was doing that. So we'll hear from him later on in the show. But if you want to have your say, do you think the EFL could be doing better for Charlton in their current situation? Like I say, studio at charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live. There's also a thread on the Charlton Live forum for tonight's show if you want to talk about anything I've mentioned above. Before we hear the highlights of the game, Nath and Lewis, you were both there. Nath, first up, come away from an away game with a point. You take that with you?
Meh. Yeah, it was
Lee Bailey wasn't happy, was he?
No. I thought he kept his cool quite well, considering, because you could sense the rage.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I have to admit, and now I don't know if it's just I had much lower expectations than everyone else, but I was at the game. I quite enjoyed going to a new ground. I thought, well, we've had a few chances. Disappointed we've thrown it away. But I was slightly surprised by how fuming Bowyer was. But I guess that's his mindset, is we should be going to Accrington, with all due respect to them, and he says that himself. But if we're going to be, because I don't see us as promotion candidates, but Bowyer does, so he's very disappointed that we haven't gone there and come out 3-4-0 winners.
Yeah, because I said to Stubbs before the game, I said, I think we're going to win comfortably today, which is obviously famous last words. But I honestly thought the team that we put out was strong enough to beat them. And I mean, if you look at the first 20 minutes, when Carlin scored, I thought we was going to go on to do that. But yeah, it was a nice experience in a way.
Another tick off the.
Another tick. Yeah. It's the first ground where I see houses as the other side of the ground. But I was a little bit angry, but at the same time, I don't think we deserve to win it on the whole game. But yeah, it was a bit of a. Bit of a disappointment, but I completely agree with what Bo said in his post match. 100%.
Do you come away from that thinking that we've dropped 2 points there?
Absolutely, yeah. I was really disappointed yesterday actually with how we played. Especially to take the lead as well. It just seemed that we never really got going yesterday. Lack of ideas, no real plan B when it wasn't working. We just. It looks a bit stagnant, really, and like you say, all due respect to Accrington, we should be going there and taking the 3 points, but we didn't yesterday.
So, like I say, if you want to have your say on the game, studio at charltonlive.co.uk, you can tweet us at Charlton Live. Charlton Live, Fred, there's the Charlton Live forum, even there's a Fred on there for tonight's show. Let's have a listen to the highlights, yesterday's Valley Pass highlights, which were brought to you by Greg Stubley and our very own Nathan Muller.
The clearance comes now to Bauer. Bauer, now to Saar. Saar, lovely little dummy, advances forward with the ball out left now to Page. Page on a run, adjacent to bounds here. Page crosses in, it's a decent ball. Colin Grant, it's in, surely. It is, the referee's given it. Colin Grant heads home off the underside of the bar, just over the line. A glorious ball in from Lewis Page. Finds the head of Colin Grant, who gets his second in as many weeks. And Charlton 1-0 up here after 14 minutes.
Yeah, delighted. Great ball from Lewis Page, but obviously no, Carlin Grant, that is the result we said on Thursday what was going to be it, and he scored first. He's been looking so promising all season, and he's finally off the mark. What a great header and what a great ball by Lewis Page.
The second ball, actually heads back towards Key. Key lays it off to Finlay. It's a nice little football, but that's a poor ball from Connolly, and it comes to Grant. Grant, shooting opportunity again for Carlin Grant, goes to goal, just wide. Carlin Grant is another glorious chance. The ball was intercepted by Soddy, fell nicely to Grant, who immediately looked to go for goal and just dragged his shot on his right foot back out to his left. Carlin Grant and the pound here chips it in, headed away as Lapsley was to it, but it comes out to Prattley on the edge of the box, goes to goal, and Taylor dives in, almost gets on the end of it. It's out wide in the end for a goal kick. Again, Charlton with the pressure here. Now Accrington pass out from the back, and the goal kick's passed short to Ripley, and Hughes sees the run of a substitute, opts to try and pass it to him, and then looks bemused as the run wasn't from Johnson, it was from the substitute, because he's gone out for a Charlton throw. And Hughes is almost laughing that one off. That might be captured by the Sky cameras as well. It comes out to McConville on the left-hand side. We'll look to try and take on Solly. Solly just holds him up for the time being. McConville, chip ball into the box. It's header from Key, and it's just wide. Best chance of the game so far for Accrington just before half-time. Ball headed by Key, just wide. It's harmlessly over the bar in the end, and that concludes the first half here at the Wham Stadium, where Charlton go into the half-time break with a 1-0 lead. Short ball to Lapsley again. Lapsley Short now to Billick. Billick cuts inside, works himself a bit of space. Great work from Billick. Now finds Lapsley. Lapsley can run forward with the ball a bit. Lapsley on a run. Still George Lapsley on the edge of the box. Left to Colin Grant inside the penalty area. Grant beats his man. Grant 1-on-1. Oh, it's off the post and goes wide.
Great.
We'll
play.
Have to see it again, but it certainly looked like Colin Grant hit the post there. Could have made it two for Charlton. Left hand side. Clark chips it down the line to Finlay. Finlay gets a bit of space. Solly tries to retrieve him. Solly closes him down. Finlay ball in the box. Back. And it's a great change from Saul. Comes back. Great save from Phillips. Clark again is in. They had three bites of the cherry. Accrington. Charlton looked like they'd done enough, but the ball came back to Clark. Is able to finish past Phillips. And Charlton throwing away a goal lead here.
I thought we got away with it. We're still saving it, but we said 2 minutes ago they're getting more space down this side and we're not dealing with it. Not dealing with it whatsoever. Dill's made a good save and it just couldn't make up.
To the right. And Finlay. Finlay ball into the box towards Anzalo. The back post heads wide. Peeled off of Chris Solly. And that's a chance.
Oh dear, dear. We need to wake up because there's only one team that's going to score.
And now, Accrington and a counter-attack. McConville and acres of space out on the left-hand side now to Clark. Clark approaching the penalty area. Clark onto his right foot. Goes across. A tame effort. And that's a huge, huge let-off for Charlton.
Can we do it again? Carlin.
It will be Carlin Cronin. He's going to step over it. All eyes on the Charlton youngster. Already scored today. Can he make it 2-1 Charlton in added time? Last-minute goal last week. Can he do it again?
Give me a pin drop.
All eyes on Carlin Grant. Steps up, right footed, waiting for the referee's whistle. He blows. Grant steps up. It's goal bound and just wide. And that's the end of the match.
So there we go, the highlights from Valley Pass. Of a very disappointing, I guess, in the end point. Nearly nicked it at the end with Carlin's free kick, but it wasn't to be. I mean, overall, Lewis, do you think a draw was a fair result?
If anything, I was more worried that Accrington were going to nick it at the end. But, I mean, away from home, you'd take a draw. But like we said just before the highlights, really, and Greg and Nath alluded to it in there, that there was only really one team that were going to score in that second half in the end, and it seemed to be that it was going to be Accrington. So I probably would take a point going on that.
I mean, we mentioned here sort of in jest after the Sunderland game, Nath, where we hope we're not going to become that team that is not clinical when they have their spells, because we've been that team for years and years. But that was what happened yesterday. I think it was a slow start, to be honest, and I think Carlin's, other than maybe one run down the left-hand side where Carlin won a free kick, the actual goal was pretty much our first chance, our first foray into their territory. But then we had a 10-15 minute spell, but we didn't take it. At the start of the second half, there was a chance for Lewis Page, which the commentary was cut off, so I didn't play that in the highlights that we had early. And then, other than that shot from Carlin that hit the post, we really didn't show that much in the second half.
No, we did. We didn't really show a lot, to be honest. Found yesterday the ball wasn't sticking yesterday, which I think Taylor had a quiet game. We just seemed to lack invention, shall we say. There wasn't that connect between the midfield and the attack yesterday for me. But because the only time we seem to be generating space is when Carlin drops deep and just runs at the defence, and that was the disappointing thing yesterday. But if we don't, obviously, I think Bose knows that's where obviously our trouble lies, is finishing chances. Because like you say, last year, what was the word, ruthless, we said that, how many times we said it last year, it's the same old story. So we need to start being, you know, more productive and more efficient in the final third if we're going to go up like Bose obviously believes that we are going to do.
I mean, we looked at the team news when it came out before kickoff. There's only the one change, but Christian Billick on loan from Arsenal came straight in into the 3-5-2. Marshall was the one who was dropped, wasn't he? I made that up. So were you surprised by that? Was that what you were hoping to see?
Billick's good on the ball. I knew he wasn't going to last the full 90 because he hasn't played in a while. But like I said earlier, I was quite comfortable in thinking that we were going to be two up by the time we could take him off, which wasn't the case. But the team that we had out was more than good enough to beat Accrington Stanley. That's not saying that they're rubbish or, you know, they are what they are and they play a certain way. But we should have performed a lot better than we actually did, and we didn't, and you can't get away from that.
I mean, the 3-5-2 formation has obviously worked well at times for us this season, so there was no reason not to deploy it yesterday, was there?
No, I mean, I was a bit cautious, to be honest, because I thought, and it came out from the game, that we seemed to struggle quite a bit against their two wide men, against Clark and McConville. Was it McConville on the other side? They seemed to sort of catch us a little bit. I mean, Page dealt with it quite well, but it's Solly on that, so I'm not too sure Solly.
I guess when you are playing a 3-5-2, then that just leaves your wing-backs are the only person on that side of the pitch for you. So whereas in a 4-4-2, if Solly's struggling or if Page was struggling, his midfielder would be there to try and cover him. But I mean, just looking at the goal, the equaliser, Solly had to come out to try and attack the ball in the midfield. Couldn't get there, and it was over his head, and all of a sudden the guy's got a free run at the edge of the box. And then we talked about it on Thursday. You know, the BBC Radio Lancashire guy we had on Thursday show said that they're strong from the whip. So that did have us slightly worried. But, I mean, should we have changed? I mean, because should we have done something different?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, look, Souls isn't going to be... See, you've got Page on one side, and he can offer you the attacking intent, which Souls probably can't. And like you say, 1v1, what they were doing, they were keeping their two wingers high up the pitch. And then they're always going to be 1v1 against our wing-backs. So then what you're going to have to rely on, you're going to have to rely on Joe, Darren, and possibly Christian Billick in, obviously, the first half. They're being dragged out of position. But we wasn't doing it. So like you say, how many times in that second half was our right-hand side exposed? Because he was just having the run on Solly every single time.
And there was no one there.
But then it goes back to the point... We should change it, but how are you going to change it when Bo looks behind him and says pants again? Do you know what I mean? I'm going to say that every week until we get more players in, because he can't. I mean, he had to bring Maloney on because of Bellick, but what else could he do? You know, I mean, I feel sorry for him because that game was calling out for a change. Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the only change we made before that was Lapsley came off, didn't he? That was for Marshall. And that was with about 15 minutes left, so it wasn't actually that long before we conceded. So I wonder if when that happened, do you think we had actually tried to switch it up to a four? I'm not sure.
Well, he came out at the left at the beginning, didn't he, LaMarshall? And then he sort of came out to give Solly a bit of cover, and then that didn't work. But yeah, it is what it is, isn't it?
You go into any game, you sort of look at the opening exchanges, see two teams feeling each other out. But I think it was fair to say that Accrington weren't afraid to have a little bit of possession at the start. And, I mean, they didn't have much to show for us, just a long shot from Johnson that was fairly comfortable for Dillon after a couple of minutes. But they certainly came out with intent, didn't they?
They did, yeah. I mean, it's probably a big fixture for them, to be honest. You know, it's their first season up in the third tier, and they're up for it, obviously, against a big side. They came out, played with a bit of confidence, got undone by our goal, obviously, but they never really looked like we were going to dominate them. They looked like they were pretty comfortable, which, you know, probably again goes back to the fact that we were playing a certain way. It maybe wasn't the best way we could have played against them.
Yeah, but I mean, so when we scored the goal, it did feel slightly against the run of play for me. It was a lovely, lovely goal. For superb work from Naby Sarr, good jinking run, got towards halfway. Give it to Page, who had a lot of space to run into because we're sort of on a counter-attack and they were still coming back. And Page's cross for that goal was just absolutely... There's no way that Carlin could have missed that. It was such a perfect cross. I would have scored that if I had that sort of delivery. Carlin, who's banging form at the moment, headed it. I mean, he got it. It was just one of those ones where it hit... So from where we were sitting in the commentary position, we had a very good view of it side on. And you saw it hit the bar and just bounce over the line and then come out and you're like, oh, just visions of Lampard against against Germany back in the World Cup back in the day. But the linesman was right on top of it and gave it. And, you know, I mean, first of all, let's talk about that cross from Pagey.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable cross. He was my man of match yesterday. I think the cross, especially, I mean, imagine if we had that sort of delivery last year when Josh was in there, do you know what I mean? But obviously Page I feel good for Page because I thought he was so unlucky when he first came. He got injured straight away, and then he obviously came back and had that worldie against Plymouth, and it's nice now he's getting a run of games and people can actually see what he actually brings to the team, which is good, because he's not just he's good defensively, and he's obviously, as you can see, he was a great sort of outlet on the left hand side, and it was a wonderful cross. But I was more surprised Carlin used his head more than anything, to be honest. But yeah, they all count.
Well, yeah, so he's good. His goal against both his goals so far this season have come with his head, of course, after the win against Shrewsbury. But it's great to see Carlin now. You know, we started to get a couple of goals this sort of in Octoberish last season for us, and we went on loan and got an absolute hatful for Crawley. So it's good to see that he's continuing that form into this new season.
Absolutely, I've been really impressed with him, to be honest with you, all the way through. The Sunderland game, I thought he looked really lively. again to get that last minute goal against Shrews as well. But yesterday he seemed to be like the only person that I looked at and thought maybe he'd nick something, or if he was going to get us that second goal, I thought it would come from Carlin. He's got like a ridiculous electrifying pace on the ball, and he seems to be able to not be one of those guys that just runs so fast that the ball is miles away from them, they can't control it. He seems to be the guy that keeps it close to his feet. He looks threatening, wants to make things happen. I don't know whether maybe he could have squared it to Lyle Taylor when he hit the post in the second half, but he's impressed me so far, and it's nice to see, because he came in at a difficult time under Bob Peters, probably a little bit too early, and he's sort of been in and out and on and off the bench between that, and I think the loan spell at Crawley has done him a world of good.
Yeah, no, so once we've edged ourselves ahead, and like we say, it was a little bit against the run of play, but then any goal like that can really stop a team in its tracks. And it happened to Shrewsbury here last week. You know, they'd started the second half very brightly, but we scored, and then it took a knock to their confidence, and it took them 10, 15 minutes to regain themselves. So it's similar yesterday. Like, once we got our noses in front, then we looked like a team who was actually going to go and try and kill them off a bit. And we saw a couple of chances that Carlin again had that shot from outside the area. It's very direct, Carlin, I always find. He always seems to go for it. And then we had that Prattley effort that Taylor couldn't quite get on. But this is now when you're looking at the time you're on top, you've got to be going for that killer second, really.
Yeah, they're the sort of, like you say, the exact moments in games where you obviously get another goal and you make it a little bit more comfortable yourself. Because if we went 2-0, let's say, you know, Carlin scored that goal on the edge of the box, it was 2-0, Accrington got to come out of their shells a little bit more. Because I thought, when we was pressing them high, I thought we were fairly comfortable, because all they had to do is we were pressing them high, they had to go long. Billy Key wasn't going to outjump any of those back three. So we were cleaning up all day long. And then we sort of just, we didn't take our chances, which is the same old story, and then it's come to bite us in the bum again.
So after we had those couple of chances I just listed, I mean, it did sort of, other than the hilarious moment where the defender tried to pass it out to the you're still laughing now, Nathan.
Oh, it killed me.
It's just like, the defender had the ball, I think he got it from the goal kick, and then there was substitutes warming up and down, clearly in, like, bibs. Like, there's no way you'd think they were wearing a red shirt. They had a bib and jumper and whatnot, warming up and down in front of us, and the ball's been played towards one of them. I mean, to give the defender his due, if that guy was on the pitch, that would have been a perfect pass to feet and kept his run going. But unfortunately for him, he wasn't playing, and it rolled straight out. So that was nice to see. But other than that, there really wasn't much in the first half. I think Atkinson sort of started to regain a little bit of a foothold as we approached the end. Billy Key had that chance just before half time. I mean, probably it's fair to say halftime came just about at the right time for us, just as Atkinson looked to be building up a bit of a head of steam.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been the story the last couple of weeks as well. We've seemed to really come off the gas towards the latter stages of the first half, and it looks like we've been quite grateful to get the halftime whistle and get in and sort of regroup. But I don't know what happened really with all of that. I don't know why we seemed to run out of steam in the first half, whether it was fatigue or whatever, but
we could easily be, I guess, because if you think about the fact that the players know there's not a great deal on the bench, it might be a mental thing. They're thinking, I'm getting a bit tired now. If they're thinking, I might only have to do 20 minutes in the second half, they'll think, I'll give a bit more here. But maybe they are just sort of tailing off, just a theory. I mean, at the start of the second half, we did have that one chance. I'd say Pagey, again, I think wing-backs, playing as a wing-back rather than a full-back, certainly seems to be something that he's quite happy to do, because he was getting up and down outside Lapsley on the overlap in that early stage of that second half. Now, you were behind the goal, Lewis. You probably had a bit. I mean, he looked like he went for goal from where we were and was repelled. I mean, was there any better options in the middle? I couldn't really see from where we were.
Well, I thought he maybe could have got it across to Lyle Taylor, and I think Taylor's reaction sort of said it all. But, I mean, he definitely went for goal. It was unlucky, but maybe Taylor was the better option. But whether the defender could have got in front of Taylor and nothing would have come of it, I don't really know. I think maybe you can't be too mad at him for giving it a go. I thought Taylor was a bit off the mark yesterday. I think the way he seemed to be a bit rattled early on by a couple of challenges and a couple of decisions, I think the way he was playing yesterday, I think if Carlin had a square, he probably would have put it over the bar.
Taylor actually got into a little bit of he just made a funny noise at the crowd, didn't he, nearby, well, after he got taken out, and he wanted a foul. The referee gave him nothing and he moaned. Obviously the Atkinson fans near where we were sat gave him a bit back, and he just went "Ooh!" like that. This was quite funny, but so maybe that was affecting him. Maybe he felt he wasn't quite getting what he wanted from the referee after a bit of a physical battle. And then of course he had a yellow card given against him I think it was in the first half, where he just went up to challenge for a header. The referee saw enough in the challenge there to give the yellow card. After that Pagey chance, then it really was a bit of a lull in the game in terms of, I imagine Accrington were quite happy just to try and keep it a one for a little while just before they started to have a bit of an onslaught as the game continued. But Charlton really came off the gas as that half progressed, and we weren't really seeing the goal scoring chances that we'd seen in that 5-10 minute spell in the first half.
No, and Accrington done what they had to do. They wanted to make it into a bitty sort of physical game, which is how they play, which is fair enough, and we let them do that. I thought at times we let them bully us a little bit. And we didn't move the ball quick enough. So when we move the ball quick, we can cut, you know, open teams up. But we didn't do that enough, like we did for the Shrewsbury game. The first game, we didn't do it. The first half, we didn't do it. And for large parts of yesterday, we didn't do it again. So it's disappointing because we could actually, if we move the ball quicker. Joe Ariba had a good game yesterday, but I don't think he got on the ball enough or the movement around him to sort of supplement him. So yeah, they made it a physical game, and they were just in the ascendancy, so it was just disappointing.
You talk about Ariba. There was one couple of spells in the first half where he got the ball in a really tight area, and that's what you expect when you're getting towards the edge of the box. The Accrington players are going to be on top of you, but once or twice a nice bit of footwork sort of opened it up for it. But I guess as you say, like not enough really for Charlton. Maybe he wasn't getting enough of the ball.
Yeah, he weren't getting enough of the ball, and I think it was the people around him as well. I mean, there was a couple of times where he got in tight areas and he's gone out to Page and so on and so forth, but I don't think the wing-back system worked yesterday. For me, it wasn't as good as it worked up in Sunderland, because obviously it was magnificent up there, but it was disappointing, but, you know, Joe's going from strength to strength for every game he plays.
There was a muted appeals for handball for a penalty for Accrington where it hit Ariba. I have to admit, I didn't actually see it. So, anything in it?
No, I can't remember. Can you?
No.
Very muted appeals in. Now, this is a good point from Nick Hannam, who just tweeted in. So, basically, Richard Everton got booked for a challenge on Lapsley, sort of in the middle of the park. And then, literally, about 2-3 minutes later, Charlton, the ball went out for a throw-in. And it quite clearly, like, I think it was Taylor trying to take it quickly, or someone was trying to take it quickly in a Charlton shirt. It was Ben Richards Everton. Just got his hand in a way and stopped it. And now, if we'd taken that free kick quickly, we would have been down the wing. So Nick's saying, why wasn't he booked for preventing the quick throw-in, and he'd already been booked, so that would have been a red card. Now, I was surprised at the time that more wasn't made of that. I mean, did you see that?
Yeah, it did. It was obviously a little bit closer to us, and I think it was to you guys in the commentary area, so... Yeah, it was. I think Taylor went in to try and take a quick throw, and he just obviously put his hand up. But I mean, the ref wasn't really interested yesterday. Like, I think me and Nath were saying off air that some of the decisions he made were just crazy. Some of the bookings he gave out for the lightest of things, and he let some of the really heavy challenges go. So that's League One refereeing.
Yeah, a bit inconsistent. But if you're playing by the letter of the law yet there, then that clearly was a yellow card for preventing another player from taking the throw-in. It wasn't long after that that we had our big chance to properly kill it off, and we were punished 5 minutes later. It was a superb jinking run again, this time from Lapsley. Played it to Carlin. And again, this is what we see from Carlin. He's so direct. He picked the ball up on the left-hand side, but he cuts in on his right. Now, it is a tight angle, so he's driven at the base of the post. The keeper's had that angle covered anyway. If you see, there's a great picture that Kyle Andrews took of the incident. So if he had got it inside the post, the foot was there to block it. So is this the case? I mean, I having watched the highlights back now, I saw the glare that Lyle Taylor dished out there. And if he squares that, then that could well be game over.
Yeah. It's like you say, I think potentially could have been a better option in the middle. But, you know, the chance has gone now. I can see Carlin obviously is extremely desperate to make a real impression this season, and he is, but obviously goals are what sort of, you know, make you remembered and everything, and that's what he's pushing for. So you can see why he gave it a go. He is still young. He obviously sees the headlines, but yeah, maybe Taylor was better positioned to score the goal.
Sure enough, we get punished, as is the tradition these days. it was only a few minutes later. So as we said, the ball went over the head of Solly, because he had to come out. He had to come out to try and attack the ball, but it got chipped over him, and therefore he's now no longer there, because it's only one on that side. And it was Sam Finley who got down the left-hand side, put in the low cross. And now I feel so sorry in this case for Naby and for Dylan, because Naby Sarr's block on the goal line was superb. He came back out, and the save from Dylan Phillips there was incredible. He got down to his right to block a low shot. But then it came out to Jordan Clark, and it seemed to take an age to go in. Like, I just saw him hit it. And then, as you say, there was a mass of bodies in between where we were sat and the goal, so I couldn't actually see. I didn't know he'd gone in until I heard the reaction of the crowd behind the goal. But, you know, unlucky for those guys. But I guess others will be saying, well, surely there's a couple of chances to clear it after the rebounds from those shots as well.
Yeah, no, it was disappointing, because I thought we got away with it. Once, obviously, Nabs and Dill's done it, I thought we was going to be able to hook it away. But I can't remember who was, like you said, there was too many people to see who else was there, but maybe someone went asleep. But yeah, it was a disappointing goal to concede, because it's a scrappy goal. Like we've said already, I mean, I think it'd be quite harsh if we said that they didn't deserve it. I mean, like on their second half showing, if we're all honest about it. So, but yeah, it's a sloppy goal to concede, and I don't think, obviously, Jacko would be too, although he would be impressed.
What was the reaction in the way, and did people around you feel like there was a sort of a sense of inevitability when that happened?
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, apart from the guy who was singing Jerusalem for the whole entire 90 minutes, he was living the dream. But yeah, I mean, it's been the common thing, isn't it, over the last couple of weeks. You know, again, it's looking like it could have been a repeat of Sunderland with another late goal, but. Yeah, it was inevitable, I think. Yeah, Accrington started getting a bit lively, pushing us back, and I mean, yeah, like we said, it was a great block and a great save by Dills, but it just seemed to sort of freeze. And I think where the guy where Clark, he hit it into the floor, it seemed to obviously bounce sort of over, I think it was Bauer's leg, and obviously nestle into the bottom right corner. So
and all of a sudden you're worried again, because it's the third game we've taken the lead in this season, and the third game we've been ped back now, and obviously we've only gone on to react to that against Rosebery, where we went on to win. The danger is now that you think Accrington, you know, their home record's very impressive. I think they only lost three times at home last season. You're worried that they are now going to have their tails up, and they did have chances. I mean, Ofrande Zanzala had come off the bench. He had that header that dropped only just wide, and he looked quite lively in that closing spell. And you're sort of thinking he'd be quite glad to get away with it, especially when they had that great chance on the break. That again, I think it might have been Clark again, who only side-footed it pretty tamely at Dylan Phillips. But you were just worried that it's all going to fall apart there.
Yeah, he was, and it just shows out where we are now, that we're worried about holding on to a point away at Quinton Stanley, didn't it? But I mean, like you say, every game we've conceded late goals. Sunderland was 96th, Shrewsbury was 81. What one was there yesterday?
78.
So you're going into the last sort of 15 minutes of the game, and we're conceding goals. We you know, when they were piling on the pressure, and they were the only ones likely to score, it was a bit nervy. But yeah, we got away with it, which is quite sad, really, if you think about it. But.
Yeah, I mean, we did have sort of one free kick that Bauer nodded wide from Marshall's delivery, and then other than that, the very last kick of the game, Carlin sort of setting him up, and you're thinking, right, this could well be a get out of jail card here, because you know, Carlin, I've seen him score set pieces for 23s before, and he lined it up, and again, you were behind the goal though, so you probably had a better view, because someone told me the keeper touched it around the post, but for me it just, like, it went straight wide, but
it definitely got the post.
Oh, it hit the post.
I thought it just struck the outside of the post. I didn't think Ripley got a touch. No. I thought it just...
Oh, so he hit the post with it. It was
really, really close.
Yeah,
really,
so unlucky. I mean, that would have been a great moment if we'd nicked it, especially for Carlin, who, you know, worked hard all game and could have added another to his total. But I think that would have been very harsh on Accrington Stanley. So we come away with a point now. So like I say, I wasn't as down as other people. So I don't know if I just don't have the expectation level at all anymore that other people seem to have. But so I was slightly taken aback when Bowyer came out and said they were that bad, because I looked at it as, well, you know, we did create chances at times, but I guess we didn't. When you sit down and think about it, and I'm going through my notes, I say, well, actually, if you look in that second half, it was two chances. In that decent spell in the first half, you know, obviously the fact we were winning for so long as well was probably in the back of my mind, because all the time we're winning, I'm pretty happy. So that probably didn't help as well. But overall, I mean, again, coming out of the ground, were people pretty despondent?
I mean, people, it was just sort of another same old situation. You know, we are fragile towards the end of games, and we've made a habit of conceding late on. So it wasn't a big shock in the stands. Everyone sort of accepted it as it was. But it was nice, all the Accrington stewards being all friendly and cheering us up. They were a really nice bunch of people.
Yeah, so, there was a fella at the station on the way home who wasn't the nicest person, but like I say, we'll come on, that's got something to do with Mr. Jerusalem as well. We'll come on to that later on in the show. Right, so I spoke to Lee Bowyer after the game. We'll hear his views in a few seconds' time, but don't forget, I want to hear your views on the performance and on everything else surrounding the club at the moment as well. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us, like Nick did. We've already read out his one. We've got a few other tweets to come to as well, but you can tweet us at Charlton Live. There's a post on the Charlton Live forum as well that we're going to come to shortly, so don't forget, if you want to have your say, you can do so on the forum as well. Right, this is what Lee Bowyer had to say after yesterday's 1-1 draw up at Accrington Stanley. Lee, a point on the road here at Accrington Stanley. What did you make of your team's performance?
Not good enough. Not good enough from start to finish. Sloppy in possession. Decision making at times was horrendous. And that's what it all boils down to. It isn't good enough for the players we have out there and players coming off the bench. That result is not acceptable for me. One draw in here, no disrespect to Accrington, and I thought they done well, especially second half. But 1 point coming here, that's not good enough.
Why do you think your team weren't at the level you were hoping for today?
Yeah, they wasn't. They wasn't. From the beginning, it was sloppy in possession. Passing at times was okay, but what I witness in at the training ground every day ain't what we've just seen today. And I've just told them, like, it's not acceptable, you know. We work hard all week for reasons, and to get players into certain areas, like, we when we tell them things and we get them into them areas, we can't make the right decision in the final third. We can't. That's something that I can't control, and that's what let us down today for sure. In the final third, our decision making was just wrong.
You had a spell sort of as you took the lead, and for maybe sort of 10-15 minutes after that, where you had a lot of pressure, but you weren't able to add that second goal that could have perhaps killed the game off.
Yeah, we've got to start killing games off. Like, that's been every game this season. Sunderland was the same, and then we go and lose it. Last weekend was the same. Today, no different. Like, there's times when we're out playing teams and we look good. But there's other times when we seem to drop deep, and then we're inviting pressure. Like, teams play long ball, that's what they do in this league. A lot of teams do. It's not just going to be a pretty football match all the time. And today we just wasn't good enough, for my opinion anyway. Okay, we've got a point, we didn't lose the game, but it's still not good enough. You have to come like these places and win, in my eyes, if you're going to be getting promotion for sure.
You got to have a look at your new signing today, Christian Billing from Arsenal. What did you make of his performance?
I thought he'd done okay, yeah. For his first game, I thought he'd done well in possession. He got a bit tired at the end, you know. He's only a kid, he's just 20 years old. And obviously that's his first game. And it's different to playing like 23's football, so he got cramp at the end. But yeah, I think he done all right for his first game, yeah.
Obviously, Colin Grant got his second goal in as many games. Had a few other chances as well, but it's nice to see, like I said last week, your striker starting to sort of get a few goals as well.
Yeah, but it's not enough though. One goal, we should be scoring 2, 3, 4 goals here. We should be, but we haven't. It's good for Colin to get another goal, but we should have had more. Him and Lyle should have had at least another one each, I think.
Obviously, it's a quick turnaround now up until the Peterborough game at the Valley on Tuesday. And with your small squad, is it going to be a case of it's going to be quite difficult to make changes, to try and freshen it up perhaps?
I don't know. I'll have a look at them and see how we are tomorrow. We'll be in tomorrow, and they have to be better than it was today, otherwise they get thumped. Peterborough are a good side. But we'll be ready. We'll be ready on Tuesday. I guarantee you they won't be as bad as what they was today.
Being upset with today, does that just sort of further emphasise the fact that you want to dip into the loan market as soon as possible for a couple more?
Yeah, we only need one or two. We've got players coming back from injury as well. The players out there today, like, there's no comparison. They should be winning that game comfortably. So there's no excuse. Like, they just didn't perform today. It's as simple as that. And it wasn't even that bad, you know, but you make the right decisions at the right times, then we score 3-4 goals today. But when you don't, you let sides come back into the game. It's just not good enough.
Thank you.
And Lee Christian Billick went off with an injury. Is he okay? Was it a cramp?
Cramp. He went off with cramp. Yeah. So he's tired. Like, he's 23 football's different to man's football. So. But yeah, he'd be okay, I'm sure.
He's expected to be fit for Tuesday.
Yeah, he'd be all right. It's only cramp. So, yeah.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To be occupying that left-hand side at the moment. Little step over onto his left foot. Marshall, ball in the box is good. And Rebo, first time.
Oh, what a goal!
Lovely finish!
Oh, what a goal!
Joe Rebo gives Charlton the lead. Great ball in from Mark Marshall on the left-hand side. Chips it in. And Rebo with a calm left-footed volley. Have found the bottom right corner and Charlton have the lead.
So welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. That was Lee Bowyer speaking to myself and Jake Bacon from the News Shopper after yesterday's game. He was fuming. Like I say, I didn't really expect him to be that disappointed when I spoke to him. I thought he'd be unhappy that we'd thrown away a lead and perhaps could have taken some chances that we didn't take. But he was not a happy bunny after that game, was he, Lewis?
No, he sounded pretty scathing, to be honest. I share the frustration because on paper we are the better side and we have got quality players that can make things happen. And like you say, the decision making yesterday wasn't there, the passing wasn't really there, and yeah, it's frustrating all round because, you know, we've got to come here to the Valley on Tuesday and play a really informed Peterborough side, which if we play like we did yesterday, we are going to get absolutely tonked.
We're lulling them into a false sense of security and we've been doing it for years. It's finally going to pay off on Tuesday. Nathan, like I say, I mean, there's different ways of man management, you know, and sometimes you'd see a manager when we've played average and not one come out and try and defend his players, and sometimes they put him to the sword. And obviously, Lee obviously went for the latter option there.
Yeah, I don't agree with personally, like an individual, but yesterday it wasn't good enough collectively. Mm. I think he's more than entitled to say so because it wasn't good enough. I mean, we can't. Like he said, you can't. If we're, yeah, you know, for me personally, I still think we've got a chance if we keep our players fit when they come back at top six. Champions, I don't know, I don't think so. So you've got to be beating teams like that and comfortably because you've got Taylor there, you know, Carlin Grant, you know, even to an extent, you know, Marshall, you know, he was a good player a year ago. So yeah, they do need to kick up the bum sometimes, and I think that's, well, by the sounds of it, that's exactly what they got because they didn't look too happy yesterday.
We talked about the new loan signing, Christian Billick, there. Bowyer was reasonably impressed. Obviously, you know, mentioned himself that he's a 20-year-old kid, and this is his, you know, he has actually played for Birmingham when he was 18, but he's 20 years old. You know, we've been moaning about how young our squad is, and we've brought in a loanee who's just as young as the rest of them anyway. But as I sort of said on Thursday, people think, well, he's from Arsenal, he's bound to be better. But he's still going to take a while to get used to the rigours of men's football, and that was what happened yesterday as he was cramping when he came off.
Yeah, he, like you say, cramped towards the end. He played a couple of sloppy passes, but you know, before that he looked quite comfortable on the ball. He looked like he wanted to bring other people into play. He played out from the back. He took the ball forward to sort of make up for that lack of another man in midfield with the five at the back, and I was impressed with him. Obviously he's only going to get better the more minutes he plays, but you've got to keep him fit. I know he's had his own injury struggles, so hopefully he doesn't join our long list of injuries. I don't think there's any room left in the treatment room, is there?
No, exactly. Yeah, and I said, well, again, we're trying to find a positive to talk about as well. So I mentioned Carlin Grant there, because I'm pleased for him that he got his goal, but Bowie was straight away on to, well, he should have got a couple more, and Taylor should have got one as well. So, Bowie played at a high level, and he obviously sets very high standards for his team, and he's disappointed when they drop below them, I guess.
Yeah, it was. And again, with that chance that you was talking about earlier, about Colin, he should have squared it, especially if Cole's photo shows that he was never going to score from there. Then he should have squared it, because even though Taylor had a quiet game, they're the sort of chances. It's like you said, against Shrewsbury, one chance, one goal for Taylor. It's at times like that we have to be more ruthless. And obviously, I don't think he was planning on giving any compliments out yesterday. But it does sound like it. But like I say, you do need a reality check sometimes. And maybe, because we always play better against the good teams anyway. So, like you said, I think full sense of security.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to Tuesday's game with Peterborough. Hopefully, we'll have time to have a little preview of that at the end. But as we say, Bowyer promised that the side will be ready for it. Well, let's start having a look at a couple of the tweets that have come in. Don't forget, if you want to have your say on yesterday's game, studio@charltonlive.co.uk on the emails, or @charltonlive on the tweets. If you want to get involved, you can also head over to the Charlton Live forum. Don't forget, later on in the show as well, we're going to hear from Ben Hannum about the EFL Not For Purpose banner, part of the protest up at Accrington yesterday. I spoke to him to find out what that was all about, so we'll hear from him later on in the show as well. Right, F. James was the first one. Actually, we had a tweet from Kat Varma yesterday as well, just pointing out that there was something in the private eye about Kevin Cash, the former owner, the former sort of owner, I don't know, because it's a bit confusing legally, of Charlton being bankrupt now. And he says, Slater, Jimenez and Cash, the more you hear, the more you realise what a bunch of difficult people that Murray brought into the club, and how the foundations of our current plight were set. He says, I'm not certain that Murray brought them into the club. I have to check the exact workings of that deal. But like I say, it's very complicated. It's very shady as well. But the fact that now someone else seems to be involved who's gone bankrupt as well, very, very confusing. It's like we got out of the frying pan and into the fire when Roland Duchatelet took the club over. But anyway, let's talk about the game. F. James said, good evening, chaps. In my opinion, we wasted away 3 points yesterday. Why can we not kill off a game when in the ascendancy? Yes, we have a depleted squad, but even so, we do have enough quality out there. Yes, it's only game 3, but we need to stay focused. And again, that is the thing. I mean, Nathan, you said that you believed that there was enough out on that pitch to go and win that game yesterday.
Yeah, 100%. 100% there was. There were a couple of chances that, obviously Carlin's one being one. I'm not obviously beating Carlin because he was great yesterday. But it's things like that. Because it's such a young side, we've got to expect things like that to happen, because young players could be inconsistent, especially with their decision making. But they need to learn. They need to learn quick. But I think that team yesterday, you look across, Bauer was played, Naby Sarr's played, I'm sure he's played like in a European competition. Like, he must have played in UEFA or something. UEFA.
Naby Sarr?
He must have done.
I think he played in the Champions League.
That's what I mean, Sporting Lisbon. So it's not like it was like the team on Tuesday against MK Dons. We had season pro, Solly's a season pro in there. Paddy Bauer, Lyle Taylor. So we definitely should have. We had enough comfortably to win that game, and we, like I've said, we just wasted an opportunity to do that.
Ev continues. I believe we should have a mindset to break down our opponents. We are considered a top League One club. Many teams will sit back against us and soak up our energy, but we need to have a game plan to break down opponents. We have a great ball controlling team. Now, I mean, that is true in terms of a lot of teams will do that, especially here at the Valley. But I don't really get the impression that Accrington came out to make it difficult and sit behind the ball on us yesterday. Because, like I said, in the first 10 minutes, they enjoyed probably 70% of the possession. They really took control of that game. And as they were behind in the second half, again, they were very much in the ascendancy. So it's not like we were struggling to break down a team that was sitting back. We hit them on the counter a couple of times.
Yeah, exactly. And they obviously wanted to go for it in front of their home crowd. You're not going to sit back in your own ground, are you? I don't think. But we just, like you say, we just seemed to struggle a little bit yesterday to get our heads into the game. And like Nath said there, there's enough experience in that side yesterday, especially the 11 that started, to be able to get something out of that game. And that's where we slip out. Bringing Marshall, I thought Marshall he's got to do, if he's come off the bench, he's got to do more. I've really not been impressed
with Marshall. Well, again, we mentioned him on Thursday, but because he played during the Milton Keynes game, and he's all swing and no ding. He's plenty of build up, and he's running with the balls actually being pretty good, particularly on Tuesday. But he's just delivering to the box. It just hasn't been happening for him recently, which is so disappointing. Because you know he's one of those players you really want to do well because he's a local lad. He seems like a good bloke, and we know what he's capable of. We've seen it for Bradford City, but we ain't seen it for Charlton Athletic, have we?
No, and he reminds me a lot like Lloyd Sam, where he was never. There was games that he had used to. You know, he had it in him. But you can't seem to drag it out of him, if that makes sense. Mm. Because you know, you go 2 years ago, he was Bradford's best player. Well, one of their best players when they got to Wembley. He was exciting on the ball. He beat people. His delivery was good. Since he's been here, he got injured at the beginning. And I just don't think he's found his place in the team. And I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think Bowyer actually sees him in his team whatsoever. Mm. I don't think he fits into Bowyer's system, especially if you play narrow. As a 4-4-2 diamond, he doesn't fit into as a wing back, so I don't think he actually feels that wanted at the moment, if I'm perfectly honest. But he's not, you know, he's not done anything to stake a claim to that team either, which is like you say, it's disappointing because he sounds like a nice genuine guy and you want him to do well, but it's just not working out.
What about Ev's point about us being seen as one of the big clubs, one of the top clubs in League One? Because obviously, size of the club, we should be one of the big clubs in League One. Obviously, we're not quite Sunderland, but we're certainly bigger than, you know, the likes of, you know, all due respect to like Accrington, Stanley, and the other teams down there.
Yeah, again, like you say, it's a name thing, isn't it? I mean,
is it a squad thing? Facilities. You look at that squad. Are you thinking that's the best squad in League One? You're not, are you?
No, not at all. It's depleted. It's a really depleted squad. You know, yeah, yes, we've got injuries, and we've got some top quality players to come back from injury. But even so, every squad gets injuries, and you've got to have enough there to back it up. And then the bench yesterday, so young, you know, Taylor Maloney coming on to replace Bellick when we're trying to get back into the game. His first start? Has he played for us? Has he played a league game before, Taylor Maloney? I can't remember.
He's come off the bench a couple of times, but yeah.
Yeah, and you think that's massive to put that on the shoulders of a young kid. And yeah, so that's it, really. It's not a yes. Name-wise and facility-wise, we are one of the biggest clubs in League One. But when it comes down to the squad and it comes down to what we've got going into a game and how we can go about winning that game, I think we're struggling. I mean, we're not right down there. You know, we've got good players and probably some of the best players in this division, but not enough of them.
It's interesting as well. You think about, you know, in terms of playing youngsters, you know, Lapsley started every league game so far. When he's been on, he's impressed for certain. He's been good. But, you know, he's cramping up last weekend. I don't know if he was cramping again this week, which is why he had to come off. But he certainly came off, you know, with 10 minutes left to play. And the reason is, when you get youngsters, they can't play this long. You'd expect they can because they're young, but that just doesn't seem to be how it works. You know, apparently it's another step up in terms of intensity. But, you know, people have always mentioned it over the last couple of years. You don't want to throw in your youngsters for too long, but that's what we're needing to do with George so far. So far he's played well, but it's not going to last forever, which is a worry. Ed's final tweet says, let's start to use our mind and make this a mastermind exercise. Let's just wait and see what comes through the door before September. We do, of course, have half the first team on the physio table, so it should be okay onwards and upwards. Sammy sort of echoes those sentiments towards the end. He says, it's early days. All we need to do is pick up as many points as possible till our injuries come back and a couple more loans join. Let's not forget that Rotherham did not win any of their first eight games and they went up. Let's keep have a looking at the tweets. London in Giza says, it had the feel of a pre-season friendly at Welling that took 5.5 hours to get to. Right? It's probably true. You go to Accrington, like I said, it's very small club. It's a nice club, so everyone was very kind to us, apart from, again, this guy at the station after, which I'll tell you about once we've done the tweets. It's just one of those weird footballing quirks that you end up on the same level as an Accrington Stanley because they're having the best spell, you know, deservedly of their existence for a little while, and we're having the worst. And that's just one of the weird quirks you get in League One, that our first away game was at the Stadium of Light and the second one was at the Crown Ground. Which was good to see. Tom Wallin says, thoughts on the game? Sick. Absolutely sick. But of course the fans will say it's my fault. I think he might be quite a certain Russell Slade there. Says, still on to Tuesday. I'm sure that will end well. Well, we'll see on Tuesday, won't we? Marion says she's listening for the first time this season. So welcome, Marion. She says, I only have my Twitter feed to go by, but it sounded like a disappointing performance, which is certainly what Lee Bowyer had to feel, had to say even after the game. John Pitchers, we seem to get pushed back too easily when a goal up the opposition, when a goal up and the opposition start to raise their game. It's happened in all three matches now. When does this stop being a coincidence? And now, what do we put that down to? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, well, I mean, it's happened to us a lot. It happened to us under Russell Sabre when we did have more of a squad. But you just wonder if is it tactics? Is it a case of, well, there's a reluctance to change because there's not much other than pants on the bench, according to Nathan, when you turn around? Is it because we're going to be a little... It's difficult to change when there isn't that much to do so on the bench? Or is it a mentality thing? The players know they're going to get tired. They start to sit back and defend the league, and we have to work out how we're going to stop them doing that.
I think it's probably down to a bit of both, to be honest with you. I mean, it's hard for Bowyer because, like we say, he has got nothing to turn around to. He looks back on the bench and it's kids, you know, all of it. No disrespect to the guys, because they've obviously done really well in the 23s to get up into the first team, but they are kids and they are inexperienced. So when your experienced heads in the 11 are starting to tire, I mean, Darren Prattley was told he wasn't even ready for Sunderland. He's played 90 minutes every week, has he? Since? Yeah. Prattley, I think he's played 90 minutes every week. So, you know, he hasn't really got a lot to go with. And maybe it is a mentality thing, you know, on the flip side of that as well, because, you know, it's happened 3 weeks on the bounce, the conceding late. I mean, luckily we got back into it at Shrews, but conceded late on at Sunderland and lost it, and we conceded late on yesterday and dropped 2 points. So
Richard Justin's just correcting the tweet we had in earlier. He said he thinks it was Varney that bought Jimenez and Slater to the club, which I think is more likely than Murray, but I'd have to double check that. London Inn at Geezer said, very poor substitution, that Lapsley was doing okay, didn't look tired. If anything, Prattley was blowing. Like I said, I do just wonder if it is because he's so young. But you just mentioned about Prattley's fitness, and, you know, because he wasn't supposed to be ready for the first game, so he's now getting his match fitness in actual matches, which is the best way to do it. But obviously, you want to do that in pre-season, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. And I've been quite impressed with Darren Prattley so far. I think he's been pretty solid. Again, like you say, the sub probably down to an age thing. It's a lot more intense in the senior side than it probably is in the 23s. You want to keep those guys fit, because no doubt Lapsley will be starting on Tuesday and you don't want him cramping up or even worse, and then you lose somebody else in that midfield where we're already really, really short.
Jonathan says, what happens when you don't bring in an experienced right back? Solly is not the same player anymore. You need to bring in Jason Shackle. He's a free agent. Because I thought when Solly played in, he had to play in the back three at Sunderland, I thought he looked really good. And like I say, he was clearly, like, when he made the challenge, for example, for the goal yesterday, he had to come out to the ball, because when you're playing wing backs, you're the only man on that wing. So he had to come out to try and challenge the ball. He didn't get there. So the guy had the free run once it was knocked over his head. So, I mean, do you think that Solly's the weak link, as what Jonathan's saying?
No, not at all. I mean, he was. When you play, like you said, when you play wing backs, you're more than likely, if they put high wingers, they're going to be one on one all the time. It's just the way it's going to be. I don't think Solly had a bad game against Shrewsbury or Sunderland, like you say. It was just yesterday, Accrington knew, well, they adapted their game to sort of counteract us, and it worked. Do I think Solly's going to play every week? No, but Anthony's not fit. I don't think that position is... I still think Solly's still one of the best right-backs in this league.
Yeah, 100%.
One-on-one, you'll very rarely see Solly or get beat. If you do, yeah, obviously he does, some now and again, but I still think he's one of the best right-backs in the league for sure.
Mm. I think it's that position as well. Like Nath just said, maybe if he slotted into that three, maybe, you know, if Bellick wasn't fit enough to start or something, and maybe Anthony Dick still did start on that side, maybe we'd be saying it completely differently, because he is more suited to play that little bit more central. I don't think Solly had a particularly bad game yesterday, but it's hard for him. He's not, wing backs are sort of seen as an attacking outlet as well, and he's not really that compared to Pagey.
Right, Matthias says, I think Charlton showed yesterday that we have a lacked ruthlessness. We need to be solider or more solid at the back, or score more more than one per game. Carlin Grant has started scoring, and I'm hoping he doesn't get injured. Yeah, I mean, we're hoping everyone doesn't get injured at this rate, because anyone who does would be a big miss. Got more tweets from Tom Wallin, still asking me about being patient. I think talking about the Russell Slade thing, he's happy, happy enough talking there. Sebo said, I know it happened very quickly, but from my angle, I think their keeper might have got fingertips onto that final Carlin free kick. Had there been time, it might have been a corner, but he wants to see it again. He also added that he liked Bo's jumper, which was nice. So it was the same Gucci one he was wearing towards the end of last season, where he had the one red circle on the arm. So it's a nice
Gucci
jumper.
He had matching trainers afterwards.
Yeah,
didn't
his trainers.
Gucci, nice, Gucci,
yeah,
trainers.
He drove his car looked nice as well when he drove down the lane.
Full Fiesta.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Company car, you see. So he's not allowed to this one. Yeah. 100% Charlton says Saturday, our first 11 will be absolutely knackered by the Fleetwood game. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. We'll just sort out a couple of bits. We'll come back. We've still got the emails to do. We've still got the interview with the guy who bought the EFL Not Fit for Purpose banner, Ben Hannum, into the ground yesterday. I still want to tell my story about what happened to the station, because it was really funny. So quick break. We'll be back in 30 seconds.
Silver steps in, wins it back for Charlton, comes away on a run and then feeds Fosu over halfway. Fosu on the left hand side, they're heading towards the penalty area, looking to take on Pond, gets in the box, is he going to fall over? No, he's got his address! There's number three!
It would have been nice if we had Tariq Fosu available yesterday, just when we were having that good spell on the counter. He would have been devastating, but unfortunately still off injured at the moment. Hopefully he'll be back as soon as possible. Albert Rossi tweeted me saying, Lou, I know we're short on numbers, but if you don't beat teams like Accrington Stanley when you come up against a good side, we will get beat. We must take our chances, and we're certainly going to be coming up against a good side on Tuesday evening at the Valley. Peterborough have won all three games so far, sitting pretty at the top of the league. So it's going to be a real test for us on Tuesday night here. Indeed. Right, we had a message on the Charlton Live forum. Don't forget, if you want to have your say, you can do so on that forum, or email studio@charltonlive.co.uk, or you can tweet us at Charlton Live. Mendonca in Asda's says, let's be honest, the result was an embarrassment without sounding too Tony Mowbray. We should be beating teams like Accrington Stanley. The takeover needs to happen soon, or this season will be another write-off. And what on earth has happened to Mark Marshall? We look worse when he came on. And certainly, I just don't know what, as we said, I don't really know what's going on with Mark at the moment, because he's got bags of ability, as we know, because we saw it for other clubs, and it's just frustrating that we haven't seen it so far in a Charlton shirt. Right, before we go on to emails and the other interview, I might as well just tell you a couple of stories about our journey home yesterday. Nathan, you were a witness to one of them. You were a witness to one of them. But the best one for me was just when we got home, a dog got on the train.
You
weren't there for that one, which was lovely. It was a great dog, and at one point it jumped on the table, which was quite funny. I quite enjoyed that. That cheered me up a little bit. But you were telling me, Lewis, when we first came in, and there was a post on the forum last night, everyone telling the same story, really. So we won't give away names, but I tell you, this guy was absolutely mad for it, wasn't he? And
absolute madness.
Yeah, yeah. So you were telling me, I sort of said, what was the atmosphere like? Or something like that. You said, there was this one guy who kept singing Jerusalem behind the guy. He was stood right by him.
For the entire 90 minutes.
Yeah, I said, that sounds familiar. And then someone else had put very similar on the Charlton Life Forum, which me and Nate screenshotted to each other. So obviously me and Nate weren't behind the goal, so we didn't get it for 90 minutes, but it was a mad dash back to Accrington Station, because Euston Station was closed, so the only way you could get home is go all the way over to Leeds, which is over an hour on the train from Accrington, and then back down. So it was a mad dash to get back to the station, across to Leeds, and then down to get the last trains back to London. So everyone was arriving at the station at the same time, especially because the one before was cancelled, so it was a bit of a rush for a lot of the Charlton fans. But so I got to the station, and I had friends on both platforms, actually. I had some who were going up towards Manchester, I think, so I was having a quick chat with them. Crossed over the bridge, saw Nathan there, and with our mates as well, and chatting away. And then everyone starts coming over, and then we start seeing, you know, all the familiar faces. This is partly why I enjoyed One of the reasons I actually enjoyed yesterday, I really enjoyed yesterday, mainly because like when you got to the station, because the train before was cancelled, every Charlton fan seemed to be on this train pretty much. So there's so many faces you're recognising, and it's always nice when you feel like you've all done this together, a big long away day together. And there's one group of fans that everyone will recognise if you go to the away games, and you know, nice guys that you chat to. But you know, as per a lot of every club, there's always plenty of fans, and probably myself included at times, who've drunk a lot of away games and willing to get involved in a bit of singing and whatnot. And so this Mads Frick guy was singing away, continuing his rendition of Jerusalem as we were waiting for the station. Now, I didn't see how this started, but all of a sudden though, I became aware that there was someone on the other side who had like a Manchester accent, so it seemed to be a local, and he was wearing a tight blue shirt to show off his bulging biceps. I mean, he was hench. I mean, he might have been on steroids, judging by his reaction to being sung at. But he was, I mean, he was fuming that Mads Frick was singing this song, Jerusalem. For some reason, this got into an argument, and he kept beckoning that he was going to come over to the other side. and he kept doing this for about 5 minutes. I was sort of thinking, go on then, if you're going to do it, because like, we've got a train to catch in a minute. But eventually, when the train started coming in, it's like, right, I'm going to come over then. But he was fuming, wasn't he?
He was fuming, but he had a copious amount of Brill Cream as well. Literally, I'm surprised he managed to run up those stairs with the weight of his head of this cream. But it was fun. Yeah, because I remember he picked up an empty bottle from the bin, and then he threw it, and he didn't even hit the blooming other side of the platform.
He dipped into the bin to pick up an empty 2 litre bottle of Coke. It went like a glass ball or nothing. Tried to throw it over the platform and it just landed on the rails because it didn't have enough weight on it.
But it was funny.
He did this run. He ran like a boxer as well. He didn't run like a normal person just because of the size of him. Like, he's a short guy but built.
Yeah.
And he came over threatening to... And then a couple of people came over and like, what are you doing? We're singing. We're just having a laugh. Like, go back. And then he went back to his own side and we all got on the train and went home.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's the rest of the story about what Mads Frick was doing after singing Jerusalem all throughout the game. The train back was noisy, but you know, it's a football train. I think everyone was well behaved and had their fun and got on their trains home. And luckily, we all made our trains home. Right, should we get on to the emails or no? Let's have a listen about the EFL not fit for purpose banner before we get on to the emails, because now this is something I didn't know was happening, but just before the game kicked off, it was unfurled there in the away end. Obviously, now Charlton fans are sort of at the end of their tethers when it comes to the situation with the ownership. You know, it's well over a year since we first heard about the Australians, which was in, I remember it was in April last year. There was that Daily Mail story. That's when we first came out en masse, and Charlton fans knew that there was this potential. Now, obviously, it was never admitted officially until sort of December time when Katrine left and Roland admitted that he was trying to sell the club, and he said there's more than one interested party. You remember that as time went on, a couple of times we thought it was very imminent indeed, which turned out unfortunately to be forestalled. And then we had the playoff semi-final where Andrew Muir and Donald, what's his name, and Paul Elliott were in the thing. I'm not even sure if it's worth remembering their names these days, learning them, because in five years' time it might well be a footnote. But they turned up in the director's box with the scarf. We're thinking, it might even be announced before.
Done deal.
It might be announced before the second leg. You know, there was, you know, as you know, we know about the done deal tweet, and we're not going to step away from it. You know, that at that time, a deal had been agreed, and it was expected that it could go through very shortly again. You know, people involved in the deal would be putting that out there. You know, it wouldn't just be someone making it up, which some people have suggested, but of course, that would be nonsense. So we've had a lot of forced dawns, but now we're sort of at the end of our tether because we're not really signing many players. We've clearly not got a lot of money. Half the light bulbs aren't working anymore. You know, all this trying to save money, and Charlton fans are thinking, like, we haven't got a chief financial officer. We haven't got a permanent manager still. We haven't got a CEO still. Everyone's thinking, I mean, this does look like, from the outside looking in, people are going to look at Charlton and think, like, what the hell is going on? Because it doesn't look like it's being run very well.
Like, well, it's not. That's why. You've everything you've reeled off is true, and there's no getting away with it. It's not being run very well. But we've said on this show before, the EFL can't really. They can come out and say something, surely, but they can't actually make Roland do anything because he's not doing anything illegal. I mean, they've got involved with Blimmin' Atkinson's chairman giving them pizzas when they have a good result, but they can go and have a word about that, but they can't get involved with any other stuff, I think, which is what the frustration is. But yeah, I mean, even if obviously there's certain things they can't come out and say for non-disclosure agreements or whatever, but surely they can just respond to the fans who are worried about their club, who are part of their league. But
right, so like I say, before the game, just before the start of it, this big banner was unfurled. It said EFL not fit for purpose. So obviously the fans involved in the protest now are turning their ire towards the English Football League, you know, the people who run the game at our level, because you know, they obviously think that there should be something that these people could do better for the club. So let's have a listen to this this interview. It's with one of the guys who took the banner, Ben Hannum. I spoke to him on the phone this afternoon. Just wanted to know really what the protest was all about.
I'm sure there are more than just a group of people we're with that are disgruntled with the way things are at the club. And in fact, I don't think we're the only club in the Football League that are a bit upset by the way the Football League are handling it. So really, it's trying to get noticed more than anything. It was the reason behind the banner, which was kindly funded by Card. We have a look at the EFL website, and it declares itself as, you know, being in its 120th year. It's, you know, the original football competition is a template for leagues over the world, and describes itself as being the governing body that administers and regulates the Football League, the Carabao Cup, and the Cheikh Trophy. And really, it's just not good enough what they're doing. You look at Coventry as well as us. Just not taking any notice.
What is it that you take that the EFL could do in such a situation, I guess?
Well, they've got their fit and proper persons test for people looking to purchase league football clubs, but it doesn't seem to run past the actual purchasing itself. I mean, there should be regulations of, you know, what's expected to, you know, for the way clubs should handle themselves in the league itself. You know, they want it to be competitive. You look at the Cheikh Trade Trophy. It's clubs get fined if they don't field, I think it's 5 players that have been playing regularly. So if they can fine clubs for not fielding a strong side in the cup competition, why can't they do it? The clubs that have been run into the ground by crackpot owners.
And, I mean, do you think that the EFL are going to start to listen a bit more to fans? Because I know, of course, that the Supporters Trust have asked them for a few answers as well. And, you know, chants against the EFL were quite a regular occurrence during the height of the protests over the last few years. Do you think that they will start to sort of pay a little bit more attention to what's going on?
Well, you'd hope so, but if they're busying themselves with looking into handing out sanctions for owners rewarding successful teams with burgers, and maybe they don't have the time to look into the way football clubs are being run.
And obviously you're talking about the disappointments we've had at Charlton, I guess, over the last couple of years. And at the moment in time, I guess, from a fan's point of view, it doesn't really look like it's getting any better at the moment while we're sort of in this state of limbo.
Well, I think that would probably be the official response from the Football League, is that, you know, the club's up for sale and they're going through the motions of changing ownership. But really, it's not just about Charlton itself. It's about all the clubs in the Football League. And, you know, they represent the communities in the area. And really, some owners are allowed to make a mockery of it. And it's not great.
I guess they'll sort of say in someone owning their own personal business, it's quite hard for them to come in and tell them how to run it. But I guess if they sort of, they can set standards for how they want clubs within their league to play, I guess. But then if they're going to start dishing out punishments, then that punishment will also be for the fans, because it's their club will end up getting punished. It's a really difficult situation, but I guess it's one that you just hope that the EFL would sort of take a bit more of a hold of.
Well, yeah, exactly that. There should really be sort of a minimum requirement for the way the club conducts themselves. I mean, for example, we haven't got a chief financial operator at the moment. It's, you know, how are we supposed to keep track of our finances? We haven't got a full-time manager. Poor old Lee's been handed a bit of a poison chalice, really, and I think it's going to be one of the longest-running caretaker management positions that has ever been. Surely they should sit up, take notice and go, look, you know, if you're going to take part in our competition, you need to meet, you know, you need to have a full board. Maybe things like people who've got controlling interests in the club need to be, you know, at least be present at games, or at least answer the questions of supporters, or, you know, just... I mean, we look at the situation, the Châtelet, I think one of the overriding questions with all of it is why? Why buy Chol? Why do anything that you've done with the club when he himself has said it only takes up 1.5% of his time?
So what sort of reaction did the banner get from the fans inside the Crown Ground yesterday?
Generally supportive, to be honest. There's always... questions over whether or not it'd be allowed to be displayed. I was part of the original Belgian 20 group that went across the St. Truden with our first banner a few years ago, and of course we had to smuggle that in and ended up getting kicked out of the ground anyway. But I did, members of staff at Accrington obviously radioed through and said, look, is this alright? We didn't actually have a position to put it in with other flags being up, and arms got a bit achy after a while, so I think we decided that we'd have the photos taken and it'd be noticed, and we'd take it down. But don't be surprised if you see it appear at the Valley.
And what did you make of the game overall? Your middle name's Cholton, so I guess you might have come away slightly disappointed in the end.
Yeah, disappointed. I mean, we all know the state of the club at the moment, and it's, you know, you temper your expectations for it. I mean, it's nice to get another league ground ticked off. I think if you asked me 10 years ago, would you be watching Charlton play at Accrington Stanley? I would have said, yeah, maybe in the FA Cup or something, but not a league game. to coin what our manager said, it is what it is, really, at the moment.
Yeah.
I think I was impressed with George Lapsley. I think the guy gets it, being a Charlton fan himself, running about. I don't know, perhaps I'll look at it with rose-tinted glasses.
So there's Ben Hammond, who joined us on the phone earlier on in the afternoon, explaining his decision to take the banner into the ground. And I mean, it's one that's got a lot of traction. I mean, you know, if ever there's a banner in the ground like that, I'll try and take a photo of it, just because it's quite interesting. It's got more retweets than many others, and it's picked up by the likes of clubs. You know, fans of the likes of Blackpool and Coventry seem to be interested in particular. So there's clearly a lot of fans who feel that the EFL could be doing more. And I've always said, you know, it's very difficult to go and you know, tell someone who runs a business how to run it when you don't own or run that business. Now, obviously, they can put sanction on them because, you know, if you want to play in our league, this is the only league you can play in. You can't go and play in the Scottish Football League all of a sudden if you're at Cheltenham, for example. Try and put sanctions on them, but then that will still be a punishment for the fans anyway, because if it's a money sanction, then there'll be even less money spent on players, possibly if it's a points deduction or a relegation. You know, for doing things like not having a CEO or not having a manager or doing things like that, if they could try and put regulation on that, you still end up punishing the fans one way or another, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really difficult subject. I think it is just the build-up of, you know, clubs like us and Blackpool and Coventry just feeling like you're being let down by the organisation that you play for. You know, there's a lot of money in the EFL now, probably more than there ever has been, the amount of TV. You know, the Championship gets unbelievable amounts of press and praise for being an incredible division. And that stems all the way from League Two upwards. And I think when you're an organisation of that size, I suppose you struggle. You've got another 70-odd clubs that you're looking after as well. But these are big teams. These are big clubs with history. They've all, you know, you look at Blackpool, you look at us, you look at Coventry, you know, Forest even to a point, and Blackburn. These are all clubs that have played in the Premier League, and they've, for whatever reason, found themselves in the depths. And we were bought by Du Châtelet in a position of, you know, financial despair, you can't really say that we're any better off now than we were then, really, when you look at it. I mean, yes, Du Châtelet is probably wealthy and has the money behind him, but he's not going to spend any of it. And I don't know. I don't know what we can get the AFL to do to help, because it's just that feeling of frustration of not feeling like you're being supported.
Yeah, I think the trust went to them asking for some. I don't know if they've published any answers from what they asked yet, but it's basically, you know, if they could be more open, for example, when they're doing some sort of fit and proper persons test, or if they're, you know, just to let the fans know, because obviously the fans are stakeholders in clubs. You know, in some clubs they're owners as well, but it means a lot to fans. And you know, fans are the, like, if there's no fans, there's no football league, you know. So they just feel that they could be a little bit more open. Sebo says that he actually taught Ben Hannum, who we just had on the phone there, presumably to drive or to do the worm, one of the two. London Geezer said the Mads Freak Geezer originally had the hump. The guy on the train platform had the hump with Jerusalem Geezer, because apparently he was on his mobile phone and told Jerusalem to stop singing, which I think you would have had to. No one was getting him to stop singing yesterday.
I did try on the way home, but it didn't went to no avail.
Right, let's have one more quick break. We've still got the emails to read and to look ahead to Tuesday's game here at the Valley against Peterborough.
Great work from Tariq Fosu, and now it's Forster Caskey over here on this near side to take the corner. Swings it in, it's gone deep. Bauer's at the far post, gets ahead of there. Oh, it's in! Patrick Bauer heads the ball down.
Come on!
Beyond Ian Lawler and into the back of the net for Charlton's opener.
Oh, I can't believe that went in, Terry Smith. The ball came in from Forster Caskey at the back post. Bauer's able to beat his man. He just heads it down on the ground almost.
Welcome back to Charlton Live. I remember that Terry Smith geezer that just mentioned in that jingle there before he went off to sun himself for what would seem to be about 6 years. Yeah, it seems ages. Yeah, he's been gone for absolutely ages. Right, let's have a look at the emails from yesterday's game. The first one comes in from Chris Davin, and it is a subject line: poor, back from a 10-hour round trip to Accrington. What to make of it? Overall, disappointing. Probably seemed worse, though, as it was Accrington. No disrespect. No, actually, rephrase that. Lots of disrespect to Accrington. We should be beating that mob. We started poorly, scored a decent goal, then made and missed a few chances. Once again, failed to hold on to a lead and ended up looking like we may lose it. Thought we suffered when Lapsley got taken off. He's all energy. Poor Marshall is all over the place and not in a good way. His confidence is zero. He rarely beats his man, and when he does, he then falls over or loses the ball. It's sad to see the club. I love playing Accrington on equal footing in a league game. It shows how far we have fallen. Thought, to be honest, what's love got to do with it? What's love but a second-hand emotion? Love the drunk geezer singing Jerusalem at Accrington Station and upsetting the weird local geezer. Highlight of the day. So Mads Freek certainly made his mark on yesterday's performance. Thanks for another song lyric there, Chris Davin. I'm going to get caught out by those every week. I'm going to start singing them, I think, a few weeks into the season. But he says, I mean, we mentioned earlier, it's just bizarre to think that we are on an equal footing. I mean, with Accrington, I mean, it shows how well they're doing, and fair play to them, and you know, they deserve to be in League One because they've played their way into League One. It's a very interesting club, Accrington Sandy, of course, but it just shows where we are. And you know, I think, you know, Sunderland will be playing them as well this season, but they'll be expecting to get out of division this season, where I'm not certain that we will be as well. So it's possibly more disappointing for us.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, also, you've got to remember Accrington won the league last year in the same league that Wickham and Luton were in, and there was loads of plaudits for what Nathan Jones is doing down at Luton. And you know, John Comer's got obviously a way of playing, and it works, and they're effective at it, and they're efficient at it. Something that we're not so at the moment. I didn't think I'd ever see Accrington Stanley, only on the adverts, the Who Are They one, that's famous advert, but you know, it is cliche at the moment, but it is what it is, and we've just got to, you can only beat what's in front of you, and we didn't yesterday.
Yeah, I do like the fact that Accrington are actually quite happy to live up to that reputation as the who are we? I went into the club shop before the game and they had mugs with those exact words. Who are we exactly? All over it. I thought it was very, very funny. But like I say, they certainly gave us a good game yesterday, and we're certainly deserving of their point. Right, Mark Newbury's got involved. Same old. He says, "Evening, chaps. Ever had a feeling of deja vu? We control the game, don't take our chances, and get punished for it. I've not known a couple of seasons like it. If it's a mental issue or a skill set, I'm not sure, but too often we are bemoaning not getting enough points from a game, and to be honest, I'd rather spend the last 10 minutes of a game just lumping it into the stands and worrying about nice football. As we have a few younger lads now, we don't want them to start to feel the dread of conceding late on as they try and dribble it away when Rose Z will do. Can't understand the dislike for Dylan going on in the forums at the moment. He's not the worst we've stuck in between the sticks, and I believe he will become a really good keeper. Unfortunately, the crossbar was set high last season with Amos, and I think fans feel like he should be the same. I'd rather stick with him than stick steering, as I think too soon it will do his confidence. Hoping to get to Peterborough Tuesday if I convince Mrs. Chef to look after the boy solo. Cheers from Mark. I hope you can get down, Mark. As I say, bring him along, they'll love it. Now we're going to talk about Dylan. I mean, the goalkeeper question. I mean, again, did Dylan do much wrong yesterday?
No. He made an unbelievable save just before their goal. I mean, people like Mark's mentioned there, the bar was Amos didn't start last season that great, did he really? He grew into the season and it went on, and you know, Dylan he had an all right game up at Sunderland. Maybe people could say he could have done better about the goals up there, but since then he hasn't really put a foot wrong. And I think all the other youngsters have seem to be getting all the backing and the plaudits, you know, Lapsley and stuff like that, but Dylan's from that cut of the cloth. He's from that same group of people, and I don't think he's done a lot wrong at all. It's nice to see him finally getting his chance. He's been desperate to get the number one jersey for quite a few seasons now. So yes, Jed steers in and he's a very good goalkeeper at championship level, and I suppose people are thinking that he's going to become the new Ben Amos, but while Dylan's doing what he's doing, what's the point in taking him out?
We saw him getting iced up, didn't we, after the game yesterday. we were waiting at the side of the pitch. We already interviewed Lee Bowyer, but we were waiting for Joe Rebo to come out. But you could just see out to where the coach was. I turned around, there was a bare backside in my face about 30 yards away. Dylan was getting iced up, but apparently it's because the ground was quite hard and he was a bit bruised. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. Well, I found it interesting that Steer didn't play in the cup game during the week, because I thought he would have got some minutes there to test him out. But you know, I really don't want Dylan to be dropped, and I haven't seen any reason to drop him just yet. So hopefully that won't be the case. Right, let's have a look ahead then. It's a quick turnaround. I mean, you know what you have to expect in the Football League. Obviously, in League One, you do get quick turnarounds with Tuesday night games. Got Peterborough coming at the Valley, but just, I mean, with our squad, the last thing you need is a game 3 days later, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like we've said earlier on, they're sort of storming away at the top. Early doors, I know, but they've looked convincing in all three of their opening fixtures. So it's going to be a tough test. They're a team that's done a lot of business over the summer. They've brought in, I think, there was about 10 or 11 new signings, and they're all doing bits. They've got a couple of really strong players. They've got Matty Godden, who we were looking at last year, never really put across. So yeah, it's going to be a test. I don't know whether there going to be changes, but I don't know. Can we really change it?
I was going to say, where can we freshen things up to help with tired legs? The likes of, for example, the new boy Billick was cramping. Lapsley was cramping last week, and he just wondered if he was bought off 10 minutes to go or 15 minutes ago to prevent that happening this week. So he's got to play again on Tuesday. Or, you know, or do we try and freshen it up? But where on earth do you freshen it up?
I don't think you can. Where can you? I mean, you look at the bench. I mean, is he going to put a shove of Jose in there? Or is he going to put Rico in there? He's not. He won't. I think it'll be the same team. I probably think he'd probably go with four at the back this time. I think. But you can only put out your strongest 11 that you've got available to you, and he hasn't got that much available to him at the moment. So until mid to end of October, unless we get anything else in, this is what we've got to work with. It's simply, you know, yeah, there's no getting around it.
Yeah, apparently we might have three bodies back for the South End game, which is still a couple of weeks ago away over at Roots Hall. So hopefully that will help. But like I say, I mean, that's a might, and we know with us, if we rush a player back, they'll be out on their feet, and then they'll be out for the rest of the season. They're in our luck. You know, Peterborough, you know, lost Jack Marriott during the summer. You're thinking, oh, hopefully that means their goals will dry up. But they've averaged 3 goals a game so far. They've scored 9 already this season. Three against Luton on yesterday. 3-1 home win. Their last away game. So they were their only away game so far. They won 4-1 at Rochdale. Beat Bristol Rovers 2-1 on the opening day as well. So we know, I mean, Peterborough have always been a team, I swear, that score so many goals. So the last 5 or 6 years, they've always seemed to be a high-scoring team. Now for us, you know, can we repel that? Because we've conceded in every game so far. We haven't kept a clean sheet.
Yeah, exactly. And what worries me a little bit, to be honest, is Peterborough seem to be, yes, the side that score a lot of goals, but back then they used to also concede a lot as well. So if they might score, you know, go on and win a game and score 4 goals, but they would have conceded 3.
Yeah, the same. They haven't kept a clean sheet either. They conceded 1 in every game, so hopefully that'll be. But obviously, that's not. They haven't conceded to the level that they're.
Yeah, that's. I think that's their weakness, and maybe why they've missed out on the top six or making it getting promoted over the last couple of seasons is the leaking of the goals. But if they can shore that up this season, they're going to be a bit of a force. Mm. And we're not scoring enough. Yeah. You know, we're not taking our chances. And that's where the difference is going to lie on Tuesday.
Who's going to be our danger man on Tuesday? I think Carlin's obviously in good form at the moment. Taylor has got a couple, but a couple of people said he looked off colour on Saturday. So, but you're hoping that's going to be a case that he's going to be able to lift himself up again.
Yeah, I think Joe. I think Joe is going to be. I mean, they've got a good. They've got Louis Reed.
Great name.
From Sheffield United. So I think Joe Rebo, this could be a game where if we can win that midfield battle, we can do well. They've got, I think they've got Jason Cummins from Nottingham Forest on loan. It's a very good sign at this level. It's going to be tough, but I'm confident on Tuesday. We always seem to turn up on these big games. We always do. So I'm confident, but I think Joe Rebo is going to be our danger man.
Well, hopefully that'll be the case, and Charlton can find a way to bounce back from a disappointing draw up at Accrington yesterday. Right, we've just about run out of time here on Charlton Live. Thank you for listening all the way through, and for your tweets and your emails and your forum posts as well. Thanks for getting involved. It's always good to have your say on our show, so thanks for that. Nathan, thank you for coming in.
I see you Thursday, mate.
Lewis, thanks for having your first appearance of the season.
Yeah.
I've been Louis Mendes. This has been Charlton Live. Like I say, thank you for listening. Let's hope that Charlton can get back to winning ways when we return to the Valley on Tuesday.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.